Hey there, it's Colt Cabana. Thank you so much for checking out the past shows from the archives. All the past ones in this feed are ad-free. I took out all the ads. If this is something you like, you can listen to every single episode of the Art of Wrestling podcast dating back to 2010, absolutely ad-free for only $4 a month on my Patreon. That's patreon.com/Colt Cabana. All right, enjoy the show.
This is the Art of Wrestling with professional wrestler Colt Cabana. It's Colt
Cabana. All right, how you doing? Come on in, sit down, relax. You're about to listen to the Art of Wrestling, a professional wrestling podcast. It's a life podcast. It's a personal journal. It's an entryway to the minds, the souls, the hearts, and the lives of the people involved in the world of professional wrestling. I am your host. My name is Colt Cabana. I am a mask wearer. I am a voter. I got a sticker to prove it. I'm a podcaster. I'm a griever. I am a city lover. Most importantly, though, I am a professional wrestler, and I am coming to you live from my studio apartment in Chicago, Illinois. Before I go any further, this is a fan support and listener supported podcast supported by people just like you. We give it to you free of charge every other Thursday. ColtCabana.com, iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast from. A couple great ways that you can support: rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, tell a friend, tweet it out, Facebook it out. The best way to support, though, cultmerch.com, digitalcult.com. I will ship you something directly from my apartment. Also, patreon.com/Colt Cabana, where for only $4 a month, you can listen to over 10 years of past archives ad-free. And for an extra dollar on top of that, I got videos, special segments, weird wrestling matches, acting gigs, and so much more. And then for an extra $5 on top of that, I will give you a shout-out at the very end of these podcasts, and I will also send you a monthly collector's AOW selfie-style photo pin. It is a collectible. This month, myself and Jamie Dundee from episode 120 back in 2010. I'm excited for today's podcast. Long time coming. Today's guest is Scorpio Sky, who, I mean, hasn't been wrestling as long as I have, but has basically been on the scene in wrestling as long as I have. I know he's taken breaks over the years, and it's been a bit of a struggle and a journey to break out of California. And he did break out a little bit out of California, but then everything kind of started coming into place even a little later than myself. So he is a great story. He is a great underdog story. And I look forward to you being able to hear myself and Scorpio Sky sitting down and chopping it up. I got a couple of things to hit before we even get into that. Have you been watching me on Twitch? I have been having such a fun time on Twitch. It's such a weird, fun little community. I'm playing video games now. I'm not very good at them. I tried to play Phasmophobia with Miro, Evil Uno, and Allie. Those aren't my favorite games. Why did I play that game? I don't know. Worth a shot. Trying new things in my 40s, I guess. But come watch me on Twitch. It's such a fun time. I was a bit of a special guest on a podcast called Curious City, which is Chicago Public Radio, something that never has professional wrestling on. But I have somehow found my way into Chicago Public Radio, and we're trying to do a special. You will probably see on my timeline as you're listening to this, but check out Curious City on Twitter at WBEZ Curious City. Of course, WBEZ is the same people who bring This American Life. And we're looking to do some deep dives into Chicago wrestling, like real good storytelling produced radio about Chicago wrestling. And I don't mean like 2000 or 2010. I'm talking 50s, 60s, 70s, the amphitheater, Randy Savage's dad, something cool like that. So if you have any questions that you'd like to see us deep dive into, if you have information that will lead us into something cool, please reach out on social media at WBEZ Curious City. You will see that on my Twitter timeline. Of course, with Scorpio Sky on the show, we are always promoting AEW Dynamite. Just last week, I was able to wrestle Hangman Page. Always wonderful to be on national television. And a little information on that, if you watched it and you saw my leg taped up, it's because I was feeling great. I'd shed a couple pounds, I was feeling good. And then earlier in that day, I was kind of rolling around in the ring, trying some things out. And I gave myself maybe the world's worst Charlie horse, so much that at this point, I'm still having trouble walking. So adrenaline and everything in between literally took me through that match. But I mean, you could just chalk that up to me being a big dumb dummy, hurting myself rolling around in the ring before, you know, maybe even one of my biggest matches of my career, wrestling Hangman Page on TNT on national television. Ugh, Cabana, you're a doofus. Such a doofus. And speaking about doofuses, we lost one of the greatest. And I say that in the sweetest, sweetest way. Tracy Smothers was a hero of mine. Just a hero. He lost his battle with cancer. This podcast this week, and probably just in general, is dedicated to the great Tracy Smothers. I put up on my Patreon the podcast I did with Tracy in 2011 in a locker room. I use that with quotations for Juggalo Championship Wrestling. It was at a bar in a different bar region. I remember sitting down with him. He was so happy to do it. And at that point, like, you know, a lot of people didn't know necessarily about my podcast, but he was more than happy to sit down with me and talk about things. And, you know, I've always related to Tracy in so many ways, specifically in 2009 when I was fired from WWE and I wrestled as Scotty Goldman. There aren't that many people that understood what I was going through. And Tracy almost went through the exact same thing with Freddie Joe Floyd. I don't even know if Freddie Joe Floyd won a match in the WWF, but Tracy had worked so hard. He had been to Japan. He was doing great in WCW and you know, in Smoky Mountain, and then he got this opportunity and they just kind of, you know, scrubbed him out and then kind of fired him, if you will. And it was always humbling to talk to Tracy about that situation in general. But for IWA Mid-South in the year 2000, I was 1 year into wrestling, we would come from the Midwest and go down south, and we would be in the ring, sharing the same ring in front of anywhere from 30 to 70 people every single Wednesday or Saturday for Ian Rotten's wrestling promotion. And we would intermingle with these Southern wrestlers that weren't coming up to Chicago to wrestle. We were going down to the border of Indiana and Kentucky, and that's where we would wrestle with people like Bull Payne and Todd Morton and even Jamie Dundee. And of course, Tracy Smothers. Tracy was there every single week. I look back at it now, he was only like 32 or 33, still in his prime, was still looking for a shot, was looking to wrestle somewhere. And because he didn't have anywhere on television at that time, ECW had canceled, nobody else was giving him a shot necessarily. He was wrestling in a barn with the young kids. And I always found a special connection with Tracy Smothers. And I always assumed it was just for me. Like, he used to call me ColtCabana.com, I think, because I got my website and I promoted it, and he'd always get on the microphone and call me, hey, ColtCabana.com. As I branched out and I stopped wrestling on as many shows with Tracy, the same young wrestlers would come to me with these stories, and I realized that he wasn't just touching my heart, but he was touching every young wrestler's heart. But he made all those young wrestlers individually feel like he specifically just cared about that person. And he had been doing that for 30 years, 35 years. He wasn't looking to see who the greatest young wrestler was so he can tack on to them, so when they became big, you know, he would have a place somewhere or a job somewhere. He just did it for everyone. Tracy Smothers was the sweetest man. He will always have a place in my heart. He was also wrestling fun. Like, he was a little out there, but Tracy Smothers on your show, being out there, was part of professional wrestling, was part of the wrestling lure, and was part of my life and everybody's life for so long. Tracy, I will miss you so much. I will always think about you. I always do think about you. You are a true legend, and this world is a shittier place without you, specifically Sandy's Pizza. Who's going to deliver the pizza now, you know? Tracy, the best. Just the best. My thoughts go out to your family, your friends, and by your friends, I mean every single person who loves professional wrestling. And we're off. Hi.
Hi.
There he is. I was really sad today because today you said you did you had a photo shoot on the beach.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, am I not a beach hunk?
Well, I don't think I am either, to be honest with you.
Get out of here. You are a beach hunk.
I'm telling you. I'm not like
I've seen you with your shirt off, Scorpio Sky.
I feel like out of all the guys on the AEW roster, the two that were booked for this was myself and Orange Cassidy. And I think that's a little unlikely. Like, no Brian Cage, no
Orange Cassidy's a pretty big hunk.
I mean, he's definitely a hunk.
Yeah.
You know? But I'm sure he was probably in his jeans and t-shirt.
Well, that's me and Brian Cage are in the same category.
On the list?
Yeah, the big buff. We're the big buff guys.
You guys are in you the, guys are like, the, what is that division called?
The Bears.
I don't think it's called the Bears.
No.
It works, though.
The Chicago Bears, if not. All right, what'd you do? Did you have a professional photographer or like an AEW photographer or someone with their iPhone?
Assuming both, I hope. It was an actual photographer. No one I've actually ever seen before. It wasn't like Speedy or anything, but...
Who is the AEW photographer?
He's the AEW like, backstage.
All right. Were you doing like walking down the runways of...
No, I was hoping actually we'd do like a little bit of running on the beat. Like I you know,
because you're a Rocky, Mark.
That well, also I wore some red and white shorts. I thought it was gonna be like Baywatch, you know. But no, we just stood there, and it actually started pouring rain. Yeah. So we had to cut it early.
What's this for? A calendar?
I hope it's for a calendar. I don't know. I don't know if I'm gonna look good. I hate doing photos. Absolutely hate it. It's probably the worst. The biggest thing I hate about wrestling.
Honestly. All right, let's talk about it.
Terrible. I never know what to do with my hands. My face always looks weird. I hate 99.5 out of 100 images that I take.
I think that's everybody. That's Isn't everybody, it? Right? I mean, I don't, but for other issues.
Some people, they don't even have to try and they take amazing pictures. Like they don't even have to try. They just look good in every picture. And maybe they don't think they do, but they do. And I'm not those
I feel
people.
You see I feel you're the same way. I'm sure you I'm like, oh, Sky's all pictures look great. It comes easy for him. Get into this fat outfit that I am and then you'll have a real party.
I hope people look at me that way, but I don't know. Like someone told me they commented on one of my Instagram photos and they were like, "You never take a bad photo."
There
and
you
I
go.
Replied, I was like, "I never post a bad photo." that's why I don't post much.
I don't like dressing up.
Really? I love dressing up.
Well, I mean getting my gear on for photos.
Oh, gear. Okay, yes. That's different.
To get into the photos, because then I'm putting on like the wrist tape, all of that stuff. Hold on. You got real excited about just dressing up in general.
Oh, I thought we were jumping subjects and we were just talking about suiting up.
I
love dressing up.
In terms of what? Just
listen, I bought a red
suit. Okay, I'll listen. I'm ready to listen.
you're ready to listen.
Go on.
I bought a red suit for Double or Nothing in Las Vegas, and obviously I did not get to wear that because I'm not going to wear it out here in Jacksonville where it's 190,000.
Oh, before it was a thing, you were ready. You went, you got it tailored, you went to Indochino.com. What happened?
I didn't go to Indochino. I do have a suit from Indochino. But it wasn't from there. It's like a bright red suit. I mean, I was going to stunt. I was going to
see. Sometimes this is how my carny mind works. I can't justify, and we have friends that have done this, is paying more for an outfit for an event than you're going to make for the event. And I'm not saying that this suit costs more for it, but it's like you could not pay for the suit and still make the same money, or you could pay for the suit and make the money and then lose all the suit money.
You know,
especially if it's a one-off.
For me, it's all about being hood rich. You know what I mean?
Like, I don't know what you mean.
You don't know what I mean.
Not at all.
You save your money. You're smart. I'm not the smart.
Okay. You know? So that's your mentality.
Cody said this a few years
ago. Oh, no. And I've disagreed with everything Cody has talked when it comes to money.
Spend it now. Make more later.
You believe in that.
Hey, it's worked so far.
No, of course it's worked because you're making it.
Yeah, why not? I bought that red suit, man. I got some, you know, I didn't get to wear it.
What other stupid things are you buying?
I buy stupid things.
You know what? I knew this because we talked about this, about you going to get steaks, and you said that you love steaks.
Oh, I love steak. What's wrong with steak?
Once a week, you're buying a Morton steak.
I'm going to go get some after this, after we finish this.
Okay, it makes sense. It makes sense.
Steak is great. I feel like steak's not a bad purchase.
But also, you haven't, and this will get into this, it's not like you've made money after money your whole career. This is probably the first time you're like...
Not in wrestling, no.
Okay, so it's come other places.
I mean, I used to work a regular job. Yeah. I mean, I wasn't making the money I'm making now.
But the satisfaction of making wrestling money...
Oh, it's great.
To know that it doesn't come around that often.
No, and it shouldn't. But
and you're gonna get rid of it all before.
Absolutely.
All right. I'm not giving finance speeches. You can do what you want.
I do have a good savings. I'm not. I do blow it out of proportion a little bit. But I do have a. You know. I'm I'm investing and saving. And okay. Sort of thing. So yeah, I'm doing okay as far as that goes. But I mean, I stopped a lot while, you know, quarantine because I wasn't going anywhere. But I mean, I had a bad shoe habit. I was buying a lot of shoes.
I never got that.
Oh, I mean, I don't really consider myself a sneakerhead. Everyone says I am, but you know, to me, like sneakerheads have 200 or 300 pairs of shoes. I have like 70 or 80 pairs.
Now, Pro Wrestling Tees has gotten into the game of making some wrestling shoes. Has that been a thing in the wrestling world
you mean wrestling shoes or shoes based off wrestling?
Kind of shoes based off of wrestling.
I've seen the Young Bucks ones and
yeah, kind of that. Like before that happened, is there any type of thing?
I don't think so.
Because this is something I've never talked about.
This is different. Yeah, no, I don't think that has really been a thing too much. I honestly, like, I'm
hoping... Because customing shoes is a thing, right?
Custom shoes is a thing, yeah. I mean, I remember Frankie way back in 2006 or 2007 had his own sneakers that said FK on them, that he'd wrestle him and that sort of thing. Ideally, I really would like to eventually, like, have a shoe deal. You know,
of course,
I wouldn't be the first wrestler to do it. I mean, I think the New Day had it. Bret Hart had like Chucks with his image on them and that sort of thing. But yeah, if I can get like a deal with some sort of company and do a shoe, I mean, because anyone that knows me knows I'm such a shoe guy. It would be
you say you're not though.
It'd be on brand. I mean, I'm a shoe guy. I'm a sneaker addict, not a sneaker head.
Right. Yeah. Man, I wonder if they because. I don't know. Shoes kind of became. I started like understanding about it like 5 years ago or something. But it's probably before. It's probably been a 20-year thing that's been an underground thing that I don't know about.
Oh, shoes!
Much like
huge.
Independent wrestling, like
well, Michael Jordan,
right?
He's really what ushered.
So why didn't Hulk Hogan have a deal?
I don't think it was big in the wrestling community.
That's what I'm saying. We're so behind the times.
Yeah, wrestling is several decades behind the times. Like it's, I mean, if you listen, to like I don't know how much you know about it, but like when Jordan started wearing Jordans, from what I understand, they weren't allowed in the NBA, and they were fining him, and Nike was just paying the fines and saying just keep wearing them because then they blew up, and that's what made Nike what it is.
Right.
Yeah. I believe that's a true story. Hopefully people aren't listening to this thinking, oh yeah, you got that wrong, Sky, but I'm pretty sure that's...
I'm going to wear High Spots boots on AEW and they'll keep on finding me. And hopefully they'll blow up. We can be the next generation of trendsetters. I guess wrestling boots haven't been... Do you think they could become cool?
In like pop culture?
Yeah. Can we make wrestling boots cool?
Because, I don't know.
Because you can't wear like the long leather ones, but like those shitty Roderick Strong boots can be worn out.
Short ones
can be worn out in public.
Well, yeah, I've seen TJ Perkins and Chris Hero. They'll do wrestling boots based off Jordans.
Right. But I want
those look cool.
I want eventually Jordans to be based off of wrestling shoes.
Okay.
We're not there yet. We got to
that. Yeah. I don't know if it was Jordan or somebody put out a shoe. Like, and they were based off like Macho Man years ago or something. I think they were Jordans, but I'm not too sure.
Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't based off of a wrestling boot.
Who would you say? Someone, I'm thinking of someone that had the best, that kind of changed the game and designed their own boots. And you're like, oh, those boots are different. Those are those persons.
Who's that?
Do you know?
No.
The Rock when he had the
of course.
When he cut out the calves, right?
Yeah, that's definitely.
Like, that's the closest, I think.
You know what wrestling boot would actually, I think, make a pretty cool sneaker is Bret Hart's. Because it had like the, if you think about it, like a white sneaker with the black vinyl in the front and the back on the toe and the heel, and then the pink strips that go down the lace. I mean, that's kind of like a sneaker already.
Yeah, I'm going to have to relook at them.
Yeah, I think those would make a cool sneaker.
All right, we'll put them out in Pro Wrestling Tees and I'll give you a cut of it.
Or I'll hit up my boy Mosh and ask him to make some.
There you go. Either way, we'll do a collab.
Yeah.
Okay.
We probably have to send Brett something.
Yeah, we'll give him money.
Yeah. All right.
You know, he likes money.
Yeah, I'm sure he likes money. Yeah.
I've seen him at enough signings over the years. I'm sure you have too. Have you been on a show with Bret Hart?
Well, Double or Nothing. The first Double or Nothing he was on that. And I think that might have been the first show we've ever done together.
Because he Kirk White. Up in Sacramento?
I think it's in Sac.
Yeah. I think it's in Sac. That's his like best friend, brings him in all the time. Mm-hmm. I thought maybe you would journey up to there.
Like conventions that he was on. But as far as actually being on the same wrestling show, I think Double or Nothing last year was our first time. And I was a mark and took a picture with him. He was my hero growing up.
Is he number one for you?
Oh, he was number one by far.
Who else? Santana said he. Have you talked to Santana about this?
Of Santana and Ortiz?
Yes.
No, I haven't.
Yeah.
I talked to FTR. and they're Bret Hart guys.
Oh, of course. They beat up a man at the Hall of Fame for him.
We talked about that. Yeah, that was fun. That was cool. That was really cool. Yeah, I mean, I was a huge Bret Hart.
Did you want to train? Did you want to go to the dungeon? Did you try to go to the dungeon?
No. No, I think I might have found out that it wasn't what you think it is when I was young, and I was like smart enough to figure out, like, Bret Hart isn't actually training people at the dungeon, and Stu Hart's not training people at the dungeon. So I was like, okay.
And then in wrestling, have you heard that? Like you hear these stories. I guess even in Jericho's book, it's like Frank Hart. Right. You know, and it, like, not even like scam somebody to take over something, and it's like the 19th Hart.
Yeah. Well, when I was a kid, though, I just knew I was going to move to Calgary, Alberta, Canada. I was going to train in the dungeon to become a professional wrestler, and then obviously, that's not what happened.
Obsessed with wrestling your whole life?
My entire life, as long as I can remember. I honestly don't remember. Like, so many people have stories where they're like Frankie, he'll tell the story like, oh, you know, I loved Rocky, and then Hogan was on Rocky III, and that's how I started like watching wrestling, blah, blah, blah. I don't have a story like that. Like, it was always there.
Was it on because family?
Probably. My older brother or my cousin was watching it, and I just
started now watching. I always say my dad was a very casual watcher, mm-hmm. kind of just had it on, and that's how I remember watching it. But then growing up, my dad didn't really give a fuck about it. Is your cousin obsessed with it or anything? Or
no, not like the way I was. Right. They probably were also casual watchers, and it just struck me harder than it did them. Yeah, it's like I remember my cousin and I beefing leading up to WrestleMania 8 because he was a Roddy Piper fan and I was a Bret Hart fan.
I thought you were going to say you were an Adrian Adonis fan.
No.
That was a different WrestleMania. WrestleMania 3,
I think.
I'm showing my age, baby. Yeah.
So I remember, we had like this bet. I don't even remember what the bet was, but yeah, we had a bet over who was going to win. And obviously, I won because Bret won. But yeah, it was a... I'm thinking it was probably him or my brother, and I just wrestling just grabbed me, and I was obsessed with it. I remember being furious when WWF Superstars on Saturday would get like preempted by baseball.
Sure.
I get so mad. Like, and I'd be mad for hours.
But then you could like, because no one knew the schedule, you'd like hope that like WCW Saturday night or like Sunday morning would be on, right?
Yeah,
and like sometimes would you find it on the Spanish channel?
Yeah.
I would
find it. Or like in the middle of the night, it would be like, for us, it'd be like channel 56, you'd find something, and like it'd be like 12 o'clock at night or something. And so there was always some sort of wrestling on in the weekend.
Los Angeles, SoCal, born and raised?
Born and raised.
On the playground is where you spend
most of my days.
Whereabouts?
The actual city of Los Angeles, because anyone that is not from California calls Southern California LA. I've noticed over the years.
Okay.
It's always like, oh, you're from LA. And well, yeah. The city of Los Angeles is probably 30 to 40 minutes away from where I grew up. I'm more of like a suburb area. The city is called Claremont, which is not very known. And Claremont, Montclair cities right next to each other. And I kind of grew up in those areas. I was born in Pomona, which Pomona would probably be known as like Sugar Shane Mosley's from Pomona. The rapper Sugar Free is from Pomona. So that's kind
of
what.
A lot of sugar up there.
A lot of sugar up there. Yeah, I didn't even make that.
There you go.
I didn't make that. I've never made that like connection. Sugar Shane Mosley and Sugar Free, both from Pomona.
I'm sorry, but I'm freezing on Sugar Shane Mosley. I think a boxer?
Boxer.
Okay.
Yeah, he fought. He had a couple famous fights against Oscar De La Hoya.
And
he
you're a big boxing fan.
Huge.
Because of this guy?
No, but not because of him. I was a huge Tyson fan when I was a little kid, as I like a lot of people were.
It's on your shirt.
Yeah, I'm wearing a Tyson
shirt.
So
did you go bonkers when he came to the show?
You know what?
You know I got Tyson. An autograph, right?
Did you?
Yeah.
I've met Tyson before. I was actually more excited to meet Vitor Belfort and Rashad Evans.
No shit.
Especially Rashad Evans. I love Vitor, but Rashad Evans is one of my favorite fighters ever. And when I used to fight, I would kind of study him and try to fight like him. And so it was amazing for me to beat him. I was blown away.
I didn't even see him. I didn't even know he was there until like,
I didn't recognize him at first.
Well, I mean, those guys were hiding the whole day anyways.
Well, I saw him in the hotel. I had met Vitor at the pay-per-view, and then they came to TV after, right? And so,
but Rashad Evans didn't. He only showed up. Right. That's why I was
so Vitor came into the hotel with a guy, And I was like, and he was like, hey, what's up? And I was like, hey, man. And he comes over and he's like, hey, this is my friend Rashad Evans. And I was like, I didn't recognize him. I was just like, my jaw dropped. I'm like, oh, huge fan. And I was a huge Rashad Evans fan. So yeah. It was cool to.
And then, I guess that's kind of fun because it's like, they're not walking around like I'm the man. And it's kind of like, if you know, you know, if you don't, you don't. Absolutely. I feel we're in the same business of that.
Exactly.
I don't know how many times, you know, you go somewhere and they're like, fuck, Scorpius guy. And they didn't even know a second ago. And you felt like a schmuck, right?
I think it's the same with MMA. It's a lot like, you know, obviously if John Cena is walking down the street, people are going to recognize him. Same thing. If Conor McGregor is walking down the street, people are going to recognize him. But if Scorpio Sky or Colt Cabana is walking down the street, not everyone's going to recognize him the same way Rashad Evans or example, you know, whoever. I'm blanking on another name.
Can you remember the first time you like when you were younger, when you like went to like maybe a bar or out to eat with a name from a wrestling show? And I'll tell you why I say this.
Like a famous wrestler?
Yeah. I remember we used to wrestle for IWC in Pittsburgh, mm-hmm. and we'd like go out to eat with like Sandman and like, and I'd just be like, how's everyone not going crazy right now? Yeah. Like, it's the Sandman. Like, why does nobody care?
I think the first time I ever did was during, remember Wrestling Society X?
Of course I do.
Yeah. I went out to the Rainbow Room in Hollywood with Xbox.
Yes.
And it's the first time I ever ate snails. And, but yeah, nobody came up to him. No big deal. Yeah.
But were you like, I can't, or?
I mean, I was like, oh, I'm hanging out with Xbox. Right, this is cool. I was like, very impressed. And oh, yeah, sure. I'll try snails. Yeah. Like,
was he buying snails?
Yeah. He was just like, oh, they're so good. Try them. And I was like, okay, yeah. Why not?
Also, were you in Wrestling Society X? I was.
I was too. Yeah. We wrestled.
We wrestled each other.
Each other?
Yeah. We wrestled each other.
On not on TV. What did they do? Like, did they do YouTube as well, or not YouTube? Something.
It was MTV.com.
Yeah, because I remember we got paid half of the full rate if you wrestled on the internet.
Who did you?
You and I wrestled. You were the masked character.
Just me versus you?
Yeah, it was a 1-on-1 match.
That's so funny. You know what? I'm with you though. Honestly, I have a story about that.
I do mocap. You do mocap. I do as well. So I was at mocap. I don't know. You may have been there that day. And there was a guy, and they found a website and it lists a bunch of people's matches. And he was reading off some of my matches. And he was like, it was like Scorpio Sky and Human Tornado against Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly or something like that. And I was like, oh, that match never happened. And he's like, no, it's on the website here. I was like, oh, it was probably booked. And then something happened. We didn't have it. And then he's like, no, here's highlights from the match. And I was like, what the hell? So I saw Adam Cole a few months ago, and I told him that story, and he's just like, that's so weird because Kyle O'Reilly said the exact same thing. Really? He couldn't remember it either.
Which is funny because I think I remember that match happen. Ring of Honor, right?
No, it was PWG.
Oh, it was a PWG. Okay.
I have no recollection of it at all.
Oh, my God. All right, so I don't feel as bad.
Yeah, so don't feel bad. I didn't impress you very much, obviously.
No, the only match I remember was Evan Bourne from that show. I wrestled Evan Bourne.
I also wrestled Evan Bourne.
That was the only thing I remember from that. I guess, sure, of course I had more matches.
Yeah.
I guess you were.
You and I have had weird luck. Remember that match where in PWG where I tore my, like, just stepping up into a body slam, I like tore my meniscus?
Kind of.
It was so dumb. It was the weirdest thing.
I kind of remember that. And I was all right about it, right? I wasn't a piece of shit.
No, you were cool.
Yeah, I think I remember being like, oh, well, like, I'll take it easy on you or something.
You know,
like,
we went home not long after. Yeah. Yeah. And I was, you know, I wrestled. I had to take a little bit of time off, only like 6-8 weeks, something like that, but I was fine. But yeah, I was just like, what the hell? Like, it was weird. It was like going up for a body slam, and I stepped in like a hole in the ring, and like I felt this like pop, and I was like, oh, shit.
I almost, Ring of Honor a couple years ago, I twisted my ankle bad on my entrance.
Always the dumb shit.
With those mats that were back and forth. Yeah. Okay, so obsessed with wrestling. Parents together?
No, not growing up. No. They were separated from the time I was very, very young.
And different, did you hop back and forth or did you only?
Stayed with my mom.
Okay.
My dad was accessible. He definitely wasn't like a deadbeat dad or anything like that. He was accessible. He sent a check every month. I can call him for whatever I wanted. But we didn't really have a relationship growing up. If we actually started trying to, create a relationship at the end of his life, but we never really got a chance to before he went. unfortunately.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear. And so mom was everything then.
My mom was mom, dad, everything.
How many brothers and sisters?
I have an older brother, older brother. Yeah, yeah.
Do you like hard for her, do you think?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Hard for her?
Was it hard for her? Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because we have different dads. And his dad was around, he's about 4.5 years older than I am. And so his dad was around a lot when we were growing up.
Wait, that's a weird relationship, right?
What? They weren't together, I should be clear.
No, but I'm saying you live with your brother, mm-hmm. and your brother has a different dad.
Yeah.
And so that dad's probably coming around, you're saying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that
he
I'm saying
come that, and pick him up and take
that
him
relationship
out and
between
things,
yeah. you and that dad.
I would be, no, he was cool. He was really cool. I would be jealous sometimes. For the most part, I didn't miss having a dad when I was growing up because it's not like I had my dad until I was 5 years old and then all of a sudden I don't have a dad anymore. So if you don't have it, you don't miss it, you know, because they separated when I was very, very young. And so I don't remember him being there. But I do remember at times my brother's dad would come pick him up and take him out, and I'd be a little jealous. But sometimes he was really nice and he'd take me out too, which was cool. As we both got older, though, he kind of wasn't around as much either. So my mom was just, you know, everything.
And then when did you say, I'm going to be a wrestler? I imagine it was young, right?
Very. I literally never wanted to do anything else.
Yeah, I'm the same way. But there was a point, and I always say this, there was a point where I was just like, I love wrestling. And then I started reading the dirt sheets like in junior high school. And I like realized that I would read the events for like 150 people in Nashville. And I'll be like, oh, I could wrestle in front of 150. You know, like that's when it kind of clicked like, oh, I could do this, I think.
Yeah.
As opposed to just like it being, because I always thought like, TV wrestling was just larger than life. I'm just some schmuck from, you know, a kid from the burbs or whatever. Whereas this kind of put it into context where like I could do it. I don't know if that resonates.
I was really naive, honestly, because I looked at TV wrestling and to me, independent wrestling or smaller companies, because I didn't know what is independent wrestling, smaller companies only existed in Pro Wrestling Illustrated for me, because I didn't think they were any indies in California. I thought everything I read about was like, oh, it's like USWA over here or this company over there. And even when I got a little older and there was like, you know, ROH and that sort of thing. Funny, ROH started and I lost my job when ROH started, and there's a connection there, which I should tell. I worked at this cart. I'm getting a little bit off subject here, but I worked at this wrestling kiosk in a mall. It was like one of my first jobs ever, and it was a dream. It was like a dream job for a 17-year-old because I just got to hang and talk wrestling all day, and it was run by RF Video.
Oh, yeah. We had one in Gurnee Mills, too.
Yeah, they were all over the place.
Yeah.
So when they
opened, a racket that fucker was running, huh?
Yeah,
Jesus
Christ. When they opened ROH, they shut all those down. So I always would make the joke of like, ROH put me out of the job.
Right. That's so funny. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, you say that, but in high school, I feel reading those PWIs, I would see Christopher Daniels.
Yeah,
in those PWIs in California.
I just don't remember ever seeing anything in California. It was just so far off. But getting back to what we were talking about, I was very naive in the sense of I thought I could be a TV wrestler. And you know, I don't know what made me think I could just a scrawny little kid and of color. You look on television, you don't see that many people of color. I don't know why I was so naive to think that, like, I guess, you know, it sounds cheesy, but I guess my mom raised me to truly believe you can do anything.
Amazing.
You know, and because like it's different now. And I think it's awesome because I was having a conversation with one of my good friends. His name is Eric Watts, not the Eric Watts from Bill Watts.
No.
Eric Watts, the wrestler from Tough Enough, big black guy with afro. And we were talking about Kofi winning the WWE championship. And we were saying, imagine if we were kids and able to see something like that, what that would have done for our mental and, you know, how that would have increased our confidence.
Well, I saw that video of MVP crying at 45 years old or whatever, like
MVP,
kids
and Shad Gaspard, you know, it would have done huge things. So now there's kids, there's a whole generation growing up now and they see that. Well, they see a lot more people of color on TV and it's great.
When you said that, that was the first thing that went to my head was did when you saw wrestlers of color on TV, did you gravitate towards them?
No.
Nothing.
Because for some reason, I couldn't gravitate to Ahmed Johnson. I couldn't gravitate to Kamala, you know, and like Junkyard Dog was kind of before my time. So that was really all there was.
The first person I thought of was Coco Beware. Like that's like where my, or yeah. Doom, I guess.
I kind of remember Doom. I kind of remember Ron Simmons winning the world title. But there were just no guys that, of color that I can gravitate to. Bret Hart was really, you know, obviously he's not a person of color, but Bret Hart was my guy. And Bret Hart kind of just felt like he was for everyone, even though he was, you know, a white guy or whatever. He just
what
kind
a quote. That's such a great quote.
Right, though? Didn't he feel like he was for everyone? Like just, Bret Hart was just for everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, everyone could relate to Bret Hart. Okay. And I would like to be that, honestly. I'd like to be, even though I am a person of color and I'll probably more resonate with other people of color, I feel I can also resonate with, you know, many other races and people. And I'd like to be that guy that's for everyone.
Scorpio
as well.
Sky's for everyone.
I'd like to be.
I love it.
Hope so.
So you think you're going to be a TV wrestler. Do you think you're going to go to the WWF Training Center then?
It's strange because I... You know, a lot of people that were getting into the business, they're like, oh, I dreamed of going to WWE and being at WrestleMania. And my reply to that is always, when I was dreaming of being a professional wrestler, there were no logos on mm-hmm. the ring in the sense of like, there was WCW, there was ECW, there was WWE, and, you know, there's all these companies. All I envisioned when I was growing up to be a professional wrestler was a big crowd, a ring, and an entrance. That's all I remember.
But I mean, when you're 17...
I'm not dreaming of going to WWE, really. But, honestly.
I mean, like, so you got
to
go get trained.
Oh, yeah.
How are you getting trained?
Funny. When I'm 16, this is how I found out there was independent wrestling in California. I was watching SmackDown. I tell this story all the time. I was watching
commercial?
SmackDown.
A local commercial.
You've probably heard me tell this.
No, we all had those. I mean, we had them during Raw, okay. You know, like.
So during SmackDown, LWF, right before the main event, there would be a commercial for the news. They would advertise whatever was going to be on the news that night. And in this particular case, it was the EWF heavyweight champion, the future Frankie Kazarian up next. And I was like, what? Yeah. And so I watched the rest of SmackDown and I watched that that special, and it was about a wrestling company locally about 30 or 40 minutes from where I lived, and it was profiling this wrestler, Frankie Kazarian, who was the champion. And I got the information, and my mom called while I was at school the next day, and she got the info. And that Saturday, myself and, you know, my former partner, Quicksilver, we started. That was our first training session ever. It was that Saturday with Jesse Hernandez.
I was going to say, so you trained with Jesse?
Yeah.
I didn't know
that's
that.
That's where I started.
And so I've talked about a little bit on the podcast. Well, maybe you don't have his kind words. I don't know. But I mean, Jesse's kind of a legend.
He is a legend.
Yeah.
Yeah, everyone knows Jesse.
Well, that's. I'm hoping everyone knows Jesse, but I don't know if everyone knows Jesse.
They should. Jesse's been in the business for like 40 years or
40
something.
Years, and every WWF, like AWF, he was the referee. Mm-hmm. Like in the movie No Holds Barred, I feel he was the referee.
Yeah, probably.
In the Phil Collins video with the Ultimate Warrior, somebody else was the referee. But in the movie Grunt, he's the referee. he is in every bizarre, obscure thing.
And so many people went through his school. It won, you know, in one way or another. I mean, like Victoria, I believe, went through there. I think Melina, I know for sure Melina went through there. Obviously, Frankie. And there's so many that I probably couldn't even name off the top of my head.
Jesse Hernandez was the low rent. Who's the guy that found the Ultimate Warrior?
Rick Bassman.
Yeah, he's the low rent Rick Bassman. Like, if you can't get in with Bassman, you go in with Jesse.
That was it, actually. There was Bassman and there was Jesse.
Right,
those
of
were the California, you know, and then Rev Pro kind of snuck in there, which is where I ultimately ended up finishing my training. But yeah.
So you started at 16 years old.
16. But I only trained for like a couple weeks, maybe to a month, just because I didn't have a car. It was tough. It was, you know, 40 minutes from where I lived. I was in school, high school, and that sort of thing. So it was just really tough to get out there every week. So I ended up having to stop training until after high school.
How long was that stop for?
So I was 16, so I was a junior in high school. So
a year and a half. Did that? God, that would be so frustrating. I would have been like almost like blue balls. You know what I'm saying? Like,
strangely, I wasn't that blue balls about it.
But like, you loved
like,
wrestling.
I was like, I know I'm going to go back.
You loved wrestling.
I did, but I knew I was like, I'm going to go back. I knew I was young. I was tiny, and I was like,
how can you run those ropes? How can you run those ropes and take those bumps and not want to go back?
The first time I ever went was there was some wrestler. I don't want to say his name, but he my first day of training ever, he asked if he can give me a cross arm power bomb. And so obviously I was like, yeah, and I even barely knew how to bump, and he gave it to me. And I had heard actually a few years later that he power bombed some kid and like he either killed the kid or he like gave the kid brain damage or something. So I looked back and I was like, oh boy, I'm glad that wasn't
right.
Me, man.
I might have known that. Yeah. I might have known what story you're talking, because I think at the same time that Kali thing happened,
yeah,
that this thing that you're talking about happened, because it was like a lot. Because I remember being like, a lot of shit's going down in California.
Yeah, a lot. Yeah.
Why, you know, gratefully for me, my trainer's like, they were like, you can't do this until you run the ropes. We can't do this till you lock up. But you always hear those schools that are like first day power bombs.
Well, I don't want to. This wasn't part of the class. I don't want to make Jesse look bad. This is definitely not part of the class. This was after the class. Jesse was nowhere around. There's actually this, you know, there was just a little bit of hanging out in the ring after. And ended up just, he asked, he's like, oh, could you take this? And I was like, yeah, I'm in a ring. This is my first time in a ring. I'm excited. I'm like, yeah, I'll take it for sure. And he was safe with me. I didn't get hurt. I knew how to tuck my chin, that sort of thing. You know, that bumping came easy for me because I was doing a little martial arts, and it's, you know, martial arts called slap fall. So it's the same thing as a bump. So I knew how to protect myself, thank goodness. But if I didn't, it could have been bad.
Yeah. You go back at 18, and you know, we can't rush this whole thing, but you floated for a long time, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I floated for a long time. You know,
You weren't one of the. Were you one of the PWG six?
No, I was at the very beginning. I did the first PWG show. Might have been in the first PWG match ever. I don't remember if we opened that show or not. But I wasn't one of the six that like actually chipped in and started. You know. Started the company from the ground up. I was around there. I saw it all come together, which is funny. And because Super Dragon and I were close at the time. And then, you know, it became what it was. It's right. Pretty amazing.
So what would it be like 15 years on the independents until like, what do you, well, I don't know.
Yeah, pretty
well,
much.
I don't know. Like, do you count stuff as your break? Because if I was to say Wrestling Society X, I'd say that's a break being on MTV.
I don't think it was a break. I think my break came at ROH.
I mean, I would say it would be the SCU stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but I think my break came at ROH.
But before that, you had traveled.
I had close calls, I think.
What were your close calls?
I think I had a lot of close calls where it was like, you know, I think Wrestling Society X, I don't know if I can consider it a close call, but it's like, because it didn't work, obviously. But if it worked,
right, you would have been, yeah.
You know, I almost did Lucha Underground. I chose not to do it at first. And then I, you know, a year or so later, I was interested. And then they were like, well, we'll give you a tryout, you know, because, you know, that sort of thing. So that didn't work, which is good because those contracts were pretty bad.
Right.
WWE dangled the carrot a few times, and they, you know, they liked me, and then they didn't want me, and they were like, they were like the pretty girl that leads you on.
And I'd imagine you were one of those, because there was a group of guys that were just like, you know, much like I was when they came to Chicago in the Midwest in like 2004 to 2006. I was at like every show. Mm-hmm. I was an extra there.
Oh yeah,
I'd imagine you probably
every time they came to LA from about 2008 2009. The first thing I ever did was when they brought Floyd Mayweather in, and like he punched Big Show, and like Big Show chases after him, and he pushes the security guy. I was one of the security guys he pushed.
Okay.
To the side. Yeah, that was my first time I ever did. That's actually funny because obviously they do their pay-per-views on Sunday. So I'm at home chilling on Sunday, and Frankie Kazarian again calls me. He's like, hey man.
I'm on the news for EWF.
He was with TNA at the time, which is funny. But he had a relationship with people from WWE, and he was like, hey, they might need some guys in Vegas at the pay-per-view today. Can you make it there? And I was like, absolutely, just let me know. And I think a few minutes later, someone else called me. They were like, how soon can you be in Vegas? And I was like, about 2.5 hours, which is a three and a half hour drive.
I was going to say, I thought it was a 4.5 hours.
It's like three and a half okay. hours. I was like, yeah, I could be there like 2.5 hours. And can you get there as soon as you can? I'm like, cool. So I hop in my car. I floor it. I'm literally going 100 miles an hour the whole time. I got there in 2 hours and 45 minutes or something. I go in there. I think I find either Tommy Dreamer, Dean Malenko, or maybe it was Damian Noble, one of those guys. And they were like, oh, they're going over that spot in the ring. Just go ask them what they want you to do. I was like, cool. So I go to the ring and I look in the ring and it's Vince and it's Shane and Floyd Mayweather. And I have no idea what I'm getting into here.
Now, boxing, huge Floyd Mayweather
fan?
Oh,
of course. Yeah, okay. Huge. But I see Vince, I see Shane, I see Floyd Mayweather, and I see Big Show in the ring, and they want me to walk up and say, "Hey, sorry I'm late, guys. what do you need me to do?" Which I did not do.
Yeah,
I just kind of stood there and listened. But yeah, so that was my first, and ever since then I was on almost everything.
Yeah, I mean, I know you did. Are you blowing
sorry.
Up? That's okay. I mean, besides the Shelby thing, which I'm really not interested in talking about. Yeah,
I'm not interested.
Great. Yeah. Other random things or just did you have matches?
Never any matches.
No shit.
Never any.
Didn't
matches.
Get a velocity match.
Never
of any
got
sort?
A velocity match. I was always like an extra. Like I was a security guard when Kevin Nash was gonna, or it was like CM Punk was gonna go try to get after Kevin Nash in the ring, and that kind of pops up a lot. People post that a lot, and so I did that, and just little things, background, you know, hanging a photo, yeah. or something. You
yeah, because I, you know, Adam Pearce comes to mind. He was always like, I think he was like Stone Cold stunt double because they were doing a lot of stuff in L.A.
Oh yeah,
so it feels like.
And I used to do a lot of commercials.
That's what I'm saying. Maybe you could. Is there stuff, not only WWE, but other random wrestling stuff because you're in LA?
Well, WWE specific, when they went to sci-fi, they did a lot of like sci-fi type commercials where we would be like hooked up to strings and we'd be flying all over the building. Yeah, like we would do a thing where like, I don't know who it was, someone would like hit me with a kick and then I would do like all these flips backwards through the air. And that was one of those commercials. The first time I met Cody. And I took the Crossroads, and I took it well. So then the next time they called back the commercial, he remembered me. He saw me. He's like, oh, they were like, pick a guy. He's like, I'll take him because I take his finisher well.
Of course.
That was the first time I met Cody. And I always remind him of the story because it's funny how weird he was when we first met him because without any intro or anything, randomly he just walks up to us as extras, and he's got these gummy candies. And he's just like, yeah, I have my dad's genetics. So I just chew these and then I spit them out. I can't eat them, which doesn't really help at all. But like, and then he walked away and we're like,
I just take in all of the sugar.
And then, and then I spit out the gummy
the gelatin.
Type, yeah, the jelly type. Yeah, gelatin type thing. And so he walks away and that was it. We were like, all right, that's weird, you know, but these guys are weird. They're WWE guys. You know WWE guys, they're weird. Mm-hmm. You know, they're just all weird.
Of course.
I don't know if they're still weird because obviously we had a lot. Most of the guys there we know.
We've infiltrated.
Yeah.
Our group has infiltrated the system.
How weird is that?
It's cool.
It's weird to have like everyone there is just like our guys now.
I mean, you know, it's weird because we've both been on the scene for so long, but, you know, even in 2007 or whatever, mm-hmm. like they were, you know, a different group of my guys were there. And mm-hmm. now, of course, a different, you know, this other group. So yeah. It's been like that for a while, which is nice.
Remember when they were like, we don't want indie guys. Yeah, indie guys was like it was like a leper at one point. Yeah. It was just, oh, we don't want indie. Oh, wrestle. Oh, we want pro athletes.
6'2", 250 was the mandate.
6'2", 250.
I mean, I snuck in there at 6 foot, whatever I am. You know, they were like, I was an exception to the rule.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
I remember sitting in a dressing room one time, and it was me and the Young Bucks and one other guy. And we were just obviously, you know, we're four smaller guys. And JBL walks past the dressing room. He looks in, he shakes his head, and he keeps walking. And you hear him go, TNA, TNA, TNA. Because obviously we're small guys.
Right.
So it's like TNA. And so that was.
Indies didn't even get enough love to be the shitty small guys. It was TNA.
Yeah, they were like, oh, these guys are balling to you. The funny thing is, like, I remember Matt, Nick, and I all kind of joked about it at the time. We were just, we were all struggling at the time. We were like, huh. I'd love that. Can you put in a word for it?
In a perfect world, right?
Like, you know, we're all struggling on the indies, you know?
I don't talk about mocap on here that much either.
Mocap's fun.
And it's something I've done, you know, I would say for 10 years I did, off and on. It kept me paid, right? Yeah. I mean, it was almost a godsend, would you say?
Absolutely. Well, it helped me big time because... you know, I've told this story a trillion times of, you know, I worked a day job and eventually I got to a point because wrestling wasn't working out. And so I was kind of enjoying my job. So I was like, maybe I'll wrestle for a couple more months and then I'll quit and, just dedicate myself to this job. Because the thing about having a day job is
you could buy shoes.
One always, well, one thing always takes from the other, right? So, wrestling takes away from your day job and your day job takes away from wrestling. If you get an opportunity, which happened to me multiple times, say, hey, can you come to Australia for 3 weeks? We want you to leave in 2 days. Mm-hmm. I can't go to my job and say, hey, guys, I'm going to be gone for 3 weeks and I'm leaving tomorrow.
What was your job?
That's the funny thing.
We don't talk about that?
We never talk about it. It's a big secret. I like it that way. None of my friends even know.
I'm not even allowed to know after this.
You don't know. My best friends don't know.
That's crazy.
No, it's a joke. But anyways.
Wait, it's a joke?
No, it's not a joke. It's just nobody knows, and that's what's fun. Someone will figure it out. Anyways, so I was going to quit my job, or I was going to quit wrestling dedicate myself to the job.
I can't do the rest of this podcast.
I'm not going to tell you. I mean, this has been a years long thing. You know, I got Johnny Yuma has been trying to figure out what I've done for 10 plus years. And so,
is it sexy?
It's not sexy. It's okay. Not. It's not what people will think. I'm not a porn star. I don't do anything stupid. Like, you know, I shouldn't say that. That makes it sound like I'm saying porn is stupid.
Right, right.
Nothing crazy.
Right. I'm so intrigued. So it will be forever now.
Anyways, let me get back to the subject here. I was going to quit wrestling and just work this job. And then I went to work one day and they said, you don't have a job anymore. So I was like, okay, well, I'll take one last shot at wrestling, see if it works. Wrestling still did not work, you know, because I had to get out there and really, really hustle. It didn't work for at least a year or more before ROH came. And mocap kept me going a lot of months. When I was wrestling on the indies, I would make good money sometimes, but some months I wouldn't. And mocap would help supplement that, and I'd pay my bills.
And of course, mocap is motion capturing. It's when you put on the suit and you do the motion for the WWE 2K video games.
You're doing the moves. You're doing the entrances. You're basically mimicking what the superstar does in his
Who is your? Who is your? Did you have a specialty?
And
I remember I was a good pallbearer.
They really liked me as Enzo.
You did an Enzo.
They had me do Enzo so many times.
Could you do the shuffle?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I did every, they had me do Enzo so many times. I was blown up. And then finally, I remember, because it was so tiring, because he's so, you know, spastic or whatever the word is. And then I remember they were like, this is the last time you're going to have to do it. Don't worry. This is it. Like, you're done after this. And I did it. And then he got released, right after. So it was all for nothing.
They knew. Yeah, I must have known. Don't worry. After this, he's getting released.
Yeah, maybe they knew. I don't know. Do it again. Like, why am I having to do this?
So catching on must have been great. I mean, I remember Frankie and CD and the Bucks vouching hard for you, mm-hmm. which they did.
Yeah.
The SCU Act caught on with the help of the Bucks and their show, and then you guys just being good wrestlers.
Yeah.
Did you feel part of something special as you were doing it, or was this the job?
I didn't know it was special. I wish I can remember what month it was. We did obviously the Being the Elite skits, and then we formed the group at Final Battle in like 2018. No, obviously it was 17 because 18 was our last year. But so Final Battle 2017, we formed the group, and then a couple months go by, we're heels, and then there was some type of a gauntlet match we did at Hammerstein. And I remember the music messed up, so we had no music. But when we came out, the crowd erupted. And we were like, what the hell is that? Like, it was a huge pop. And this was only maybe 2 or 3 weeks after we started doing the Worst Town bits on Being the Elite. Because I remember specifically going to Matt in the back, because Matt told us right after we started filming him, he was just like, give me 2 or 3 weeks. You guys will be huge. Swear, that's what he said. He's
what,
like,
a little 2 or 3 weeks. A little mastermind.
They're geniuses. They've got the cheat code. And 2 or 3 weeks later, we do that show. We come out, we're heels, but the crowd erupts and they pop for everything we do. And that's when we obviously turn babyface after that. But that's kind of when I realized that we were on to something. I was like, holy cow, and we're just being ourselves. And this is actually working, which was pretty cool.
Yeah. And then I don't know, I guess being in AEW has to be like the cherry on top. Especially, I mean, before this fucking shit went down, right? Like just being in the big arenas.
The big arenas was cool. Like it
constantly, right?
And it felt exactly what I was dreaming of when I was growing up. as strange as that sounds, it was. I remember doing a couple of shows and literally thinking, "This is exactly what I dreamt of when I was a kid," and it was amazing. Sometimes I still pinch myself. I'm like, "Is this real? Like, am I really? Did I make it? I made it. Like, this is crazy."
And I feel it's like when we were in PWG and like it was so underground and like, but the crowd was there and we knew how to get the crowd. Right. And I'll put like us on the same idea of like, cause we were all those performers in PWG, like those years or whatever it was. Like, I feel that was, it just took so long, but like we knew that we could just pluck that and put it into the arenas and we would know what we were doing. And like, no one gave us a shot. And now it's just like, you know, and by us, you know, throw the bucks in there and Kenny too. And it's like, look, like, if you gave us a shot, this is what can happen. And it's happening.
It kind of goes back to that whole, we want pro athletes 6'2", 250 thing. And they tried and they tried and they tried. And obviously they, you know, you can't argue, they found a couple stars, but, you can't just ignore certain things. Like, you should look for talent. Don't look for a certain type, you know, and if you're looking for a certain type, that means you have tunnel vision and you're not, you're overlooking so many, you know, talented guys. I mean, they had, I'm not even going to take myself out of it. I mean, the Young Bucks were extras several times. And now they're two of the biggest wrestlers of the last, what, 10, 15 years?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
they're huge. And they've changed the business in more ways than one. And I always look back and I'm like, you had them.
You had them.
They were there. You could have done, you know, you didn't see it.
And well, that's, you know, now like they'll send Regal to some shows, maybe, you know.
Yeah, he used to go to PWG a lot from what I heard. I mean, I haven't done PWG in, you know, 7 or 8 years.
Right.
But,
well, myself included. Right. That's what I'm saying. They'd send him, but I remember in the 2000 being like, I mean, pro baseball sends scouts to the minor. Like, because I remember being on shows and just being like super over and being like, well, I mean, no one's seeing this. Like, you know, like, not that that's what I was trying to do it for, but I was just like, if they had someone here, they would see, and then they could see that, like, I can draw money. Chris Hero could draw money. Claudio can draw money. You know, Samoa Joe could draw money. Dragon could draw money. You know, but just no one was there to see it, and that's why it took so long.
Yeah, well, thank God it got where it's at.
Yeah.
It's good for all of us.
And I'm not complaining about it. I think it's cool. I think it's cool that, like, I just feel that we weren't wrong.
No, yeah, we were right.
Yeah.
We were all right. All of us were right, which is cool. We all have bragging rights. And all the fans of indie wrestling and the people that, you know, would support indie wrestling,
those t-shirts too. And stuff,
they were all right.
They were right. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's cool, man.
That's great.
Good talk.
We made it, bro. We out here.
Thanks, dude.
Thanks.
Scorpio Sky is on Twitter and Instagram at Scorpio Sky. And check out Scorpio Sky's YouTube channel. He's starting to put up some AEW vlogs along with some other fun content. All right, that is the show for the week. Before we leave you, though, we do have some plugs and
upcoming events.
One giant plug is Eat Right. It's a lifestyle delivery meal plan based out of Tampa, Florida, shipping all over America. They are pre-made and they are sent right to you. You have to do zero cooking. They are guaranteed fresh, vacuum-sealed meals that can be customized, conventional, keto, plant-based, healthier, and more. All you do is throw them in the microwave, you give it 2 minutes, and your healthy meal is ready to go. This week, I've been eating kimchi egg bites, also lemon chicken with some broccoli mash, along with a whole week's worth of food that has been delicious. Let me get you 60% off your first week with the code COLT. Go to eatright.life, enter the code COLT at checkout, and get 60% off your first meals. That's eatright.life. Plugs! All past archives are ad-free at patreon.com/ColtCabana for $1 more. You can also get full Instagram live call-in shows, never-before-seen Colt Cabana content, Let's Watch Wrestling, Art of Wrestling live videos, and so much more. Twitch.tv/ColtCabana. I am on there all the time, playing only the fun games, having a great time. Grab some merch, ColtMerch.com, DigitalColt.com, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, at Colt Cabana. ColtWrestling@gmail.com is my very public email. That's where you can hit me up for shows, conventions, or business or non-business stuff, or send something fun to my P.O. box, just like Quilted Onyx did. She sent me this great Chicago mask. I'm going to wear it everywhere. You can find that at the bottom of my website, ColtCabana.com. Upcoming, AEW, AllElitewrestling.com. If you want to come on down to Jacksonville, there are safe tickets being sold. You will be potted off, and social distancing is required. Intro music by the Ukulele Teacher on YouTube. Outro music by Superfun Yeah Yeah Rocket Ship. Podcast cover art and design by Jimmy Lee. Photo by James Musselwhite. Thank you to our sponsors, EatRight.life, BlueChew.com, MyBookie, MagicSpoon.com, and of course, OneHourTees.com. They help run ProWrestlingTees.com. That's where you can find all of my shirts, ProWrestlingTees.com/ColtCabana. Huge thank you to my Patreons over at the $10 tier. Hold the line, Harry, Sasha, Jade, Logan, Lee, Brian, Joseph, Jocelyn, Maureen, Aaron, Molly, Stacy, Kim, Ernie, Jeremy, Adam, Amanda, Jim, Callum, Tristan, Josh, Tabitha, Jay, Ismail, Tam, Jesse, Mary Kate, James, Matt, Samuel, Michael, Fred, Nash, Gut Pocket, Steven, Vicken, Anthony, Nick, Arlen, Dean, David, Joey, Jimmy James, John, Tom, David, Jeff, Jonathan, Cody, Nicholas, Chris, Nigel, Matt, Adam, Tom, Sammy, Juan, the Ska Man, Ed, Justin, Rudy, Joe Mills, Callum, Maria, Aaron, Victor, Christine, Murag, and Scott. Your support is so appreciated. Let me know what else you want to see on that Patreon, and I will hook it up for you. All right, this has been The Art of Wrestling for Colt Cabana. I'm Colt Cabana. Thanks.